to the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future Deco, Modern, Retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Today I'm at the historic Parr Homestead in Hillsborough talking to Trish Salvey. Her interest in New Zealand history was kindled 7.5 years ago here at Parr. At the time, a historian by the name of Dr. Oliver Steed worked here. He organised a group of people who paid a small sum and took them up into the tower for a historic tour. The history of Tamaki Makaurau poured and flowed out of him with details of the lives, triumphs and defeats of individuals. He breathed life into the past. It was magic. Tris was hooked and she wanted other people to experience it. So she kept on organising groups and friends to go on the tour, which usually was once a month or so. When Oliver was transferred to a position at the Alexander Turnbull Library later that year, Trish was asked to help with the staff from the Parr to continue the tours. So that's how she became a historic volunteer here. She is hooked on the history of the Parr Homestead, its land and its occupiers, because it is so rich in history and its connection to so many strong historical characters. Good afternoon, Trish. It's lovely to have you on the program today. And so we're at the lovely and historic Parr Homestead. You're going to give us some history.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. I'm glad you could come out here on such a beautiful hot day. I am hoping that some of your listeners might come and visit. The Parr Homestead is situated in Hillsborough and is off Hillsborough Road. The entrance to it's kind of hidden, so you're going to have to look out for it. And when you do come down, it's down a tree-lined driveway.
Yes, I did notice that today. It's gorgeous, actually, all those trees.
Right. Mm-hmm. What you're going to see is you're going to see the car park on the left, but I'd also like you to look on the right, because that's where the original stables were. And they're quite large, beautiful building. It's a brick building. Park your car, and then you're going to see the Parr Homestead. It's a huge, stately home that was built in an Italianate style and was part of the picturesque movement. It's a two-storied building. It's got a tall, four-storied Belvedere tower, which is Italian, beautiful view. And it does, in fact, have a beautiful view, because the Parr Homestead is situated on a ridge line that at one point in history they thought that it was the edge of a volcanic cone, but now they realise that it's the uplifting of the seabed some 200,000 years ago. And once upon a time, back in the early 1700s, they actually had a Parr on this site. It was called Whataroa Parr, and that means the long and extensive food house. And the reason for that is because Hillsborough is located very close to Three Kings Volcano, as well as One Tree Hill. This land is very fertile with volcanic soil.
Yes.
And they grow a lot of yams and kumara, a bit of taro, things that they brought down from the islands with them. The Parr itself was ended in about 1750, and that was during a sort of troubled time when Kiwi Tamaki created friction with the Ngāti Whātua tribe. So this whole Auckland isthmus became a little bit turbulent,
right,
to say the least.
Yes.
And So when in 1844, the first English owner bought this site, his name was William Hart, he'd heard that there was a pa in this area. He scraped off the top of the ridgeline in order to put a 8-bedroom colonial villa on in those days. Mm-hmm. And he saw evidence of the Totara palisading, and so he called it Pa Farm mm-hmm. at that point.
Okay.
It went through a number of different owners, and then James Williamson bought the property, and he also, further scraping the ridgeline, saw the evidence of the Totara palisading, and so he decided to keep on the name Pa.
So was the house that the, I can't remember yes. his name, built, was that still here when...
Yes, it was.
Okay,
yes.
Right.
So... during that period, it had gone through a few different owners. So William Hart, who'd initially bought it, he was a land speculator, and his wife Mary was from America. And in 1852, he decided to go back to America. And John Logan Campbell and William Brown, who were partners in business, bought the property at that point. They'd also bought One Tree Hill Domain and Tutu Island.
Goodness.
And just used them for grazing.
Wow, big landowners, weren't they?
They were extremely big landowners, and they themselves had their residences down in Auckland Central at the time. And from them, they then sold it to James Farmer. And James Farmer was very good at looking after properties. He lived in the colonial house sometimes, but tended to go down to his property down in Drury, or was looking after other people's estates. He then sold it in 1866, Thomas Russell. Thomas Russell was a lawyer. He arrived in Auckland when he was 10 years old, 1840. He became a lawyer and was very influential in the acts. So Thomas Russell bought the property from James Farmer. Thomas Russell was one of the people that founded the Bank of New Zealand Insurance Company and Loan and Mercantile Company, along with James Williamson and John Logan Campbell, also owners of this property at different time. Thomas Russell's quite significant in New Zealand history because he and his lawyer partner, Frederick Whittaker, both wrote a lot of the acts that helped Governor Grey in confiscation of the Waiato land during invasion in 1863 mm. to 65.
Okay.
He was on a lot of different boards, including arts trusts and museum. Made a lot of money as a gold rush mm-hmm. at Mill. And then in 1877, he sold the property to James Williamson. And James Williamson had his history in New Zealand was he's an Irishman and came from Belfast. He was son of a linen merchant who had sailing ships that used to come down to the Pacific to sell the linen. Losing it again. So James Williamson was Irish. He was Belfast in 1840, and his father was a linen merchant, had a number of ships. So when he was growing up, he would come on some of those ships. And it was in 1840, when he was 26, that he was on a ship that went to the Bay of Islands. He decided to get off and start a shop on the beach, Russell.
Gosh, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah, so... I wonder whether he, you know, maybe visited New Zealand, you know, on previous voyages mm-hmm. and stuff like
yeah.
that.
It,
was that quite a sharp decision. But he set up a store and he sold some provisions and he sold grog to the sailors. And goodness, there were a lot of sailors up there in the Bay of Islands.
Sure. Those would be the days.
It was known as the hellhole of the Pacific.
I'm sure. Wasn't it the capital at one stage?
It was that year. Yes. In 1840, the year that he arrived, it had become the capital. And so there was a lot of trade going on there. And then in 1840, we also had the Ngāti Whātua who gave some land to the colonialists down here in Auckland.
Oh.
And because Auckland's more central, I think they decided to shift the capital down to Auckland from the Bay of Islands. And James Williamson left the Bay of Islands and came down to Auckland City and teamed up with a guy called Thomas Crummer. And together they put a bid in and they got a property for a quarter acre section on Shortland Street for 266 and set up a store there. And they also set up a hotel right at the end of what would have was very close to Shortland Street because we've reclaimed a whole lot of the land. And it was a hotel called the Victoria Hotel. Business prospered really well, and soon they bought a large section of 316, I think it was, acres, which they called Surrey Hills.
It's all Ponsonby, isn't it?
That's right.
Crummer Road.
Well, this was the Grey Lynn. Yes. You've got it.
Yes.
So Crummer Road and Williamson Avenue were named after the two of these guys when he later subdivided it a long time later. So they continued to prosper. He was very good with finances. This is James Williamson. And they got involved with the gold mines.
Around Thames,
that's right. But he and the previous owner, Thomas Russell, and started off the BNZ. The New Zealand Insurance Company and the loan.
Very people, weren't they? I mean, you know, they got out there and did things, didn't they?
I really put that all into it personally.
Right.
He, at the age of 43, he married a London social. That was here in Auckland. She was Auckland Beauty. She's 26-year-old and she had dark hair, blue eyes and a pale complexion.
Oh, wow. What a combination.
Exactly. They had six children. They had three boys and three girls. Boys were James, Sydney, and I thought at first that Thomas might have been named after Thomas Crummer, but James Williamson's dad's name was also Thomas, so it could have come there. So the year after they were married, actually Thomas Crummer died, and his half of the Surrey Hill estate went to his sons. Partnership with them. By the age of, he was very well, and he decided to show off his wealth and build this great manor in a style that reflected that. And that is the building that we're in here today.
Our house.
Yes.
Mm.
He got
quite a house in its day, wouldn't it? I mean, it's enormous.
Yes. One of the largest around.
Yes.
There were three houses that were built.
One of the other ones.
The architect who built it was Edward and Thomas Mahoney, who also designed Meridian College and Custom House. They had built a house similar to this down Napier the year before. Then they designed the Pa Homestead, and after that they down near the Rose Gardens called both of those other houses are no longer here.
So this is
a beautiful example of what the other houses looked like. And the style, which was extremely popular in the day, was styled off Osborne House in Isle of Wight, which was the holiday retreat for Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. And Prince Albert had a lot to do. Back in the 1800s, they were very influenced by classical architecture, Italian stuff. Yes. So looking at the Parr homestead, you'll see all the Ionic columns, Corinthian columns, the archways and support round.
And a very grand entrance it is, Banzai.
Hugely grand, yes. So when you enter it, you sort of have to come under the portico, which is like an arfort, I guess, but outside of the front entrance, where the carriages would be pulled up and you'd be let off. And and out the stairs going into the homestead. The house itself, this was kind of designed during the picturesque movement. So they're wanting it to integrate into the landscape surrounding it. And James Williamson had a very park-like gardens. A gardener called John Blake looked after it. They had 8 gardeners, plus they also had Mr. Hurd looked after all the livestock and the agricultural side of things.
They had
they had Chinese market gardeners here working on the estate. So it wasn't just a home, it was a working
farm.
And a lot of those parklands, you get the feel of it now because that's what you see around this building. So if you come to visit our homestead, you've a cafe you can visit inside, but also wander around and look at all the trees that they planted back in the 1800s. Yes.
I love to drive up. Well, those wouldn't be the original trees, wouldn't they?
No, but they've probably been planted there to what the original was.
Beautiful driving up there today.
The original drive was put in by Tysel up to the colonial, and it came up from Power Road. It's got a lot of very mature bay figs that are there, and of course you look out upon the Manukau Harbour.
Right.
The view from up here is wonderful. You look down at on the hunga, across to One Tree Hill, and
it's a bird's eye view almost, isn't it? Really?
It's spectacular. It's
amazing.
Well, it really would have been back then, because back then there, you know, when he was first doing the plantings, there weren't a lot of trees around. So when you read newspaper clippings from the past, visitors to the Parr homestead would exclaim about the magnificent views, and that was from the downstairs living area. So coming into the house, you've got beautiful cornices and plaster roses in the ceilings. This changes as you go into different rooms. You have marble fireplaces and Minton tile hearths. The style, although it's part of the Italianite movement, because this was built in the late 1800s, 1877 to 79. It also has some of the Queen Anne Revival movement, where they went a little bit more ornate. So in the drawing room downstairs, you'll notice very unusual. They've got curved glass windows. And these are...
Really?
Yeah, these are sash windows.
That would be unusual in that day.
Yes.
Something to happen, really.
But they were, this was sort of a period during the end of the Industrial Revolution, so they were really very much loved embracing change, new technology and things, and there was a lot of technology going on with glass area of making larger panes of glass. It's a whole development in that area. James Williamson also decided to put something quite unusual at that period was flushing toilets.
Thank goodness for that.
So he had
would be quite unique in those days.
It was unique. And just as you come into the entranceway, if you go into the toilets off on the right, you'll see above the fire toilet there's a box container, and that's where the water was stored. They had reservoirs down where the long gallery, they're all underground now. But there's a bit of piping on the wall you'll see, and that's where they used to hand pump. There's a crank, you'll see a crank, a square crank hole there. Yeah. You had to put the crank handle in, so to pump it in. And the water used to pump not just down to the downstairs toilet, but also to the upstairs toilets of the main sleeping quarters, as well as the servants' rooms. So that was very kind of him.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
The servants were pleased about that one.
He had gas piping put throughout the whole building that wasn't put in later in the early 90s, where it was actually attached to the main. Other thing that that he had... Yes, sorry, I've lost myself there.
Oh, that's okay, just carry on.
So, downstairs, what you've got the... You'll be entering in the main lobby. You'll see a boat and hats on the left as you come in. And
real Victorian looking, very quite heavy.
It is. I think it's mahogany.
Right.
And you've got a lot of the wood panelling and the dados around the walls around you. And this is the only reference that we have to the furnishings that purchased during the time. So he bought the land itself with the old colonial house on for $10,000. Paid a further $20,000 the building itself and all its features. £2,000 to £3,000 stables outside, and £11,000 went to Gillows and Sons, which is a very fine furnishing manufacturing company. And so they made all the hat stand that you're going to be able to see, and the didos, newel, which is a post leading up broad staircase stairs.
It's a very, very grand house, it really is. I wonder, was sort of running, not running out of time, but time is moving on. So I wonder, Trish, if you can actually go and tell our listeners today that, you know, the Parr Homestead does a lot in the community. They offer a lot to the community. Sort of give us some idea, you know.
Sure. Okay. So, So the,
I'm sure the listeners would like to know, because, you know, a lot of them just probably come here for a morning tea or afternoon tea or lunch and don't realise that there's a whole lot of things going on. Apart from the Wallace, James Wallace Trust, which I'm about. But apart from that, involved in a lot of things, aren't they?
So the Parr Homestead, the building now, the council has bought it, so you own it. This is part of what the ratepayers have paid their money towards. It's a beautiful building, and it's a beautiful parkland that you are just free to come along and visit. It's got a cafe inside.
Picnic in the grounds if they want to.
You can picnic in the grounds. There are areas that you come and walk your dog as well, and come to the cafe. They've got a small gift shop, and which used to be James Williamson's office, and if you ask, you can have a look in the wardrobe there, because it's got a big safe, which was state of the art at the time, a Milner 212.
And they've got some lovely things in that shop, you know, lovely pottery. Jewellery.
Yeah, all
very, very sort of, beautiful.
Cranhaft gift shop, as well as some art and history book there. All the rooms in the house, downstairs and upstairs, of course, show art exhibitions, which change every couple of months. But they have community events here too. So they
this secondary school competition, is that... That's in painting. Is that all paintings?
It is mainly art wall works that I've seen. So drawings, paintings, prints, photographs. That's on at the moment, actually. So that's
because you were talking about it when we came in, I think, to Dan, was it?
Right. So that's an exhibition that they have on once a year. Boardroom, which was one of the master bedrooms. They had two master bedrooms in this house, so his and hers. They also have a community day, which is held in March.
And a lot of music apparently goes on here. I believe it's every Friday at 12 o'clock or something they have music.
Yes.
Which I never knew about.
Yeah, for free.
Yes.
On a Friday, you can come for free.
So who would they have, like violins?
Violins trios. Or guitarists.
Yes.
Or they have modern jazz stuff,
right,
as well as classical music. And on their website, you'll see what's
there. Yeah, they have quite a few evenings that they advertise, don't they?
The evenings are paid events, and
yes,
this isn't money that goes to the PA. This is often money that goes to the musicians themselves.
Oh, well, fair
as
enough.
A fundraiser. Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Because the trust is very involved in supporting the arts,
yes,
not just
great.
The visual arts. Yeah.
Exactly.
And speaking of which, they have a residency. That was what the servants' quarters.
Oh, okay.
It's a 3-month residency which goes to writers, composers, choreographers.
Great. I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
it's wonderful. So would they have somebody there at the moment, or how did you have to win some sort of...
It's a strange tie-in. You have to have an association with the Otago University or with Scotland.
Really?
And then you apply.
And
it's a 3-month residency. They get given a stipend and a...
Really?
And
wow.
Peace and quiet. And a parkland to walk, which is very nice. Yeah.
Gosh, I had no idea about that one. That's sick. Do they use the stables for anything in particular?
I believe that's used for things.
Oh, okay. They would have quite an atmosphere, wouldn't it?
It would do. So. I'm not sure whether some of it still might be used as a bit of apple and connected in with the church, because the Sisters of Mercy and they owned the PA for a period of 29.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, incredible.
Was it a nunnery?
Yeah, it started...
Live here, I think.
Yeah, so it started off as an orphanage. They used it as an orphanage from 1918 through to 1995. It then became a...
Who owned it then, when it was...
Sisters of Mercy.
Catholic Church.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then it became a novitiate training... novitiate training base for a year. And the downstairs drawing room became a chapel. If you go into that today and you look above the curved windows, you'll see some palmeting that looks kind of out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what they used behind the altar.
Oh, really?
Would hang, hung curtains, and then you have all this and seats inside. And after that, it became a boarding school and institute for learning.
It's had quite a history, hasn't it, one way and another?
Huge history.
It certainly has.
Yes.
Well, look, Trish, we're sort of
running out of time.
I know you've got a whole lot more. She's been absolutely wonderful, this lady, walking on the PA. But I think Chuck.
I might have gotten things a little bit muddled.
No, you didn't.
Not the facts and stuff, but I've been talking about. And so, look, if you would like to learn more, during Heritage Week, and we have plenty of time. I give a heritage tour, and we walk through the buildings. We talk about all the people that have inhabited here, and you have a delicious, absolutely delicious morning tea.
All sounds wonderful, and I don't think there'd be a better person to, tell you about the history of PA, because you've got it. You've just got it all stored within you, and you are quite devoted. Addicted to the PA.
Well, addicted,
almost.
I think, more than devoted, but yes.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, Bish, thank you for coming along. Well, thank you for being here and giving this great, and I'm sure our love it.
Okay, thank you very much.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Modern, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.